She talked, and she listened to me while she did the housework, if that's what you can call moving the dirt around until it got lost. I told her about the future. Why not? What harm could it do? But she wasn't very impressed. I guess she didn't know enough to be impressed. Men on the moon were all one with the fairies and the saints. But piped water caught her interest, because every day she had to go to a spring with a couple of wooden buckets on a yoke thing round her neck. "Every cottage has this," she said, eyeing me carefully over the top of the broom. "Sure." "Not just the rich."
"The rich have more bathrooms," I said. Then I had to explain about bathrooms.
"You people could do it," I told her. "You just need to dam a spring up in the hills and find a blacksmith or someone to make some copper pipes, or lead or iron at a pinch."
She looked wistful.
"My father wouldn't allow it," she said.
"Surely he'd see the benefits of having water laid on," I suggested.
She shrugged.
"Why should he? He doesn't carry it from the spring."
"Oh." But she took to following me around, in what time there was between chores. It's just as I've always said, women have always had a greater stake in technology than have men. We'd still be living in trees otherwise. Piped water, electric lighting, stoves that you don't need to shove wood into. I reckon that behind half the great inventors of history were their wives, nagging them into finding a cleaner way of doing the chores. Nimue trailed me like a spaniel as I tottered around their village, if you could use the term for a collection of huts that looked like something deposited in the last ice age, or possibly by a dinosaur with a really serious bowel problem. She even led me into the forest, where I finally found the machine in a thorn thicket, totally unrepairable. The only hope was that someone might fetch me, if they ever worked out where I was. And I knew they never would, because if they ever did, they'd have been there already. Even if it took them 10 years to work it out, they could still come back to the here and now. That's the thing about time travel. You've got all the time in the world. I was marooned. However, we experienced travellers always carry a little something to tide us over the bad times. I got a whole box of stuff under the seat, a few small gold ingots, acceptable everywhere like the very best credit cards, a pepper, worth more than gold for hundreds of years, aluminium, a rare and precious metal in the days before cheap and plentiful electricity, and seeds. And pencils. Enough drugs to start a store. Don't tell me about herbal remedies. People screamed down the centuries trying to stop things like dental abscesses with any green junk that happened to be growing in the mud. She watched me owlishly while I sorted through the stuff and told her what it all did. And the next day, her father cut his leg open with his axe. The brothers carried him home. I stitched him up, and, with her eyes on me, treated the wound. A week later, he was walking around again, instead of being a cripple at best, or most likely, a gangrenous corpse, and I was a hero. Or rather, since I didn't have the muscles for a hero, obviously, a wizard. I was mad to act like that. I'm not supposed to meddle. But what the hell, I was marooned. I was never going home. I didn't care. And I could cure, which is almost as powerful as being able to kill. I taught hygiene. I taught them about turnips and running water and basic medicine. The boss of the valley was a decent enough old knight called Sir Ector. Nimue knew him, which surprised me, but shouldn't have. The old boy was only one step up from his peasants and seemed to know them all, and wasn't much richer than they were, except that history had left him with a crumbling castle and a suit of rusty armour. Nimue went up to the castle one day a week to be a kind of lady's maid for his daughter. After I'd pulled the bad teeth that had been making his life agony, old Ector swore eternal friendship and gave me the run of the place. I met his son, Kay, a big hearty lad with the muscles of an ox and possibly the brains of one. And there was this daughter to whom no one seemed to want to introduce me properly, perhaps because she was very attractive in a quiet kind of way.
She had one of those stares that seemed to be reading the inside of your skull. She and Nimu got along like sisters. Like sisters that get along well, I mean. I became a big man in the neighbourhood. It's amazing the impression you can make with a handful of medicines, some basic science, and a good line in Bull. Poor old Merlin had left a hole which I filled like water in a cup. There wasn't a man in the country who wouldn't listen to me. And whenever she had a spare moment, Nimue followed me, watching like an owl. I suppose at the time I had some dream, like the Connecticut Yankee, of single-handedly driving the society into the 20th century. You might as well try pushing the sea with a broom.
But they do what you tell them, Nimue said.
She was helping me in the lab at the time, I think. I call it the lab. It was just a room in the castle. I was trying to make penicillin.
That's exactly it, I told her.
And what good is that? The moment I turn my back, they go back to the same old ways.
I thought you told me a democracy was where people did what they wanted to do, she said.
It's a democracy, I said. And it's fine for people to do what they want to do, provided they do what's right. She bit her lip thoughtfully.
That does not sound sensible.
That's how it works.
And when we have a democracy, every man says who shall be king?
Something like that, yes.
And what do the women do?
I had to think about that. Oh, they should have the vote too, I said. Eventually. It'll take some time. I don't think Albion is ready for female suffrage.
It has female suffrage already, she said, with unusual bitterness.
Suffrage. It means the right to vote. I patted her hand. Anyway, I told her, you can't start with a democracy. You have to work up through stuff like tyranny and monarchy first. That way people are so relieved when they get to democracy that they hang on to it.
People used to do what the king told them, she said,
carefully measuring bread and milk into the shallow bowls.
The High King, I mean. Everyone did what the High King said, even the lesser kings.
I'd heard about this High King. In his time, apparently, the land had flowed with so much milk and honey, people must have needed waders to get around. I don't go for that kind of thing. I'm a practical man. When people talk about their great past, they're usually trying to excuse the mediocre present. Such a person might get things done, I said, but then they die, and history shows, or will show, but I couldn't exactly put it like that to her, that things go back to being even worse when they die. Take it from me.
Is that one of those things you call a figure of speech, Mervyn?
Sure,